The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
We have come to demand that Congress do the right thing and only count the electors who have been lawfully slated. I know that everyone here will soon be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard today.
Well, that was Donald Trump, our president, speaking at the January 6th rally that you may have heard about, that's been in the media. I'm here to talk about that and a whole bunch of other interesting topics this night on the Bob Siegel Show. This is Mike Friedenberg filling in for Bob Siegel. And I am very honored to have a guest with me today, Steve Baldwin. Steve Baldwin is a longtime grassroots conservative activist. He was the executive director of the Council on National Policy. He was the president for Young Americans for Freedom. Is that correct, Steve?
Executive director.
And also, Steve was also State Assemblyman here in the San Diego County here for 6 years. So, Steve, there's very few people in this world that know more about politics than Steve does, and he's always on top of the issue. So just quite an honor to have him here joining us today. So thanks for being here, Steve.
Yeah, it's an honor to be on the show and can't wait to get into the topic at hand.
Well, we just heard President Trump speaking, and I was at the rally. I was there. I took off on Tuesday morning and flew out there, came in there. I was there by about 7:15 in the morning at the rally location. So I basically want to just give you folks an impression of what I saw at the rally and what Donald Trump said, and to completely, utterly debunk the idea that there was any incitement to violence or rally by any of the speakers, in particular President Donald Trump. Absolutely no incitement for violence. And in fact, one of the reasons that the Capitol Police may not have been very prepared is that for the last 4 years, millions of people have come to President Trump's rallies. And one of the characteristics of those rallies is the incredible respect they accord our law enforcement people. And there's no group of people that has more respect for law enforcement than do the president's supporters. And no president in the history has been more vocal in their support for law enforcement. No president in history has done more in action for law enforcement. So this narrative you're hearing is completely and utterly bunk. But let me just give you a little narrative of my experience there. It started off here in San Diego at the San Diego airport. Turned out when I got there, the airport was full of people going to the rally. And my son and I happened to sit across from three very nice ladies in their 60s. They weren't wearing Trump gear. They let us know they weren't wearing the Trump gear because they're afraid that they might be assaulted if they wore it. That's the sad state we have in this country. And they said, well, we can protect you. My son was wearing his MAGA hat, and I had my San Diego hat on. Of course, we're glad to do that. And they were going to the rally. The nicest ladies. And I'm going to just tell you, everybody I met, once I got to the hotel in Baltimore, right near the Baltimore-Washington International Airport, that hotel was full of Trump supporters, saw that there are people that are working, making a living, not ne'er-do-wells like you see at some of these left-wing rallies. These are people that are actually hardworking, people that make America work. So that's the kind of folks that were there. Got to the rally at 7:15. On the way in the rally, you had to hike in because all the streets were blocked off. We hiked in about a mile and a half. And as we hiked in, we passed a lady who was in her late 60s, early 70s, on a walker, working her way down the road on the rally on her walker. When I got to the rally, it was filled with working class people, professionals, There was, you know, good representation of Hispanic Americans, good representation of Black Americans, young, old, families there with kids. I'll say that just shows a cross section. Every once in a while, I was also getting a whiff of marijuana there too. It was definitely there on site. So it was definitely you know, the salt of the earth, the kind of people you want as your neighbors, and you know, just talking with them, great people. And we got there, at 7:15. People had been there before us, and the main inside area, so you could get close to Donald Trump, was already basically taken up. And that area probably held, you know, 10 or 15,000 people, 20,000 people. Well, we were in the outer area there, and I want to talk about crowd size. My wife happened to be listening to Fox, and they said, "Oh, we think there was 15,000 people there." You know, what a ridiculous statement. I can tell you, having been there, there was hundreds of thousands of people there. Minimum of 250,000, maybe more. I've heard people, you know, estimating a million. That might be a bit of an exaggeration. I don't know. But it was many hundreds of thousands of people there at that rally. And, you know, speaker started at 9, and we did not hear President Trump speak till 12. And there was almost no bathroom facilities there. So we had hundreds of thousands of people there waiting for 6 hours in the cold, you know, 39, 40 degrees with a bitter cold wind out there waiting, you know, to hear all the speakers, but specifically to hear President Trump. And so it was also an exercise in bladder control, I must tell you. I mean, it was pretty brutal. And there was a lot of older people there, too. So that's going to tell you. So this was a peaceful crowd, a law-abiding crowd. This is the crowd of people that make America work. And Trump came on a little bit. President Trump came on a little after 12, spoke to a little bit after 1. And from what I can see from the timeline, as the crowd started to leave to peacefully march, by the way, you heard that in that thing. There was no incitement to violence. There was no talk about breaking into the Capitol. Here's some of the phrases here that President Trump said in his speech. "We're going to walk down to the Capitol and we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women. I know that everyone here will soon be marching down the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard. But we're going to try and give our Republicans, the weak ones, because the strong ones don't need our help. We're going to try and give them the kind of pride and boldness that they need to take back our country." And then finally, pretty much near the end of speech, "So let's walk down Pennsylvania Avenue. I want to thank you all. God bless you and God bless America. Thank you for all for being here. This is incredible. Thank you very much. Thank you." Well, the idea that there was any incitement is just complete and utter malarkey.
They're going to try to impeach him based on this, and it's a complete lie, just like the first impeachment of Trump was based on a complete lie. They will impeach Trump on anything they can fabricate, and they have no evidence whatsoever that Trump asked people to actually break inside the Capitol. Only a handful of people actually did that. Sure, other Trump people followed once the doors were breached, but the actual people doing the breaking of the windows, I have reason to believe a lot of them were Antifa. I know one of them, John Sullivan. I've written about him before, a longtime Antifa activist. He's there in all the photographs, breaking down the doors. In fact, there's three other people I recognize in some of the pictures that were engaged in violence that I know to be Antifa. So, you know, I don't know if all Trump people were innocent of that, or maybe there was a few guys getting out of hand, but I can tell you that a lot of the key ringleaders that were urging people to break down the doors were Antifa. There is no doubt in my mind that this was planned and coordinated by a busload of Antifa people who probably even made some moves to make themselves appear like Trump people. That's a tactic used by the left for many years. Dress up like your enemy and commit all kinds of acts in order to blame your enemy. And yeah, it's hard to believe we have Republican leaders in our country who have fallen for this hook, line, and sinker.
Well, they haven't necessarily fallen for it, but it's the narrative, and they're frightened. They're not people of courage, and they've been cowed into posturing and pandering and repeating this narrative. I was there, and I can tell you I saw, and it was on video, but I actually saw this. One person was starting to break the windows. A husky Trump supporter tackled him and took him down and stopped him from breaking the windows. That person was probably an Antifa person. I saw one bottle thrown and something else thrown, and then the people in the crowd shut down the people throwing things. Police cars were able to go through the crowd without being smashed on, tilted over, trumped up. The police, unfortunately, there was a very unfortunate incident with that one officer, Brian Sicknick, and allegedly he was hit over the head with a fire extinguisher, and that may have caused the stroke.
I'd like to find out who that person is, because I'd be willing to bet it's not a Trump person.
Well, and I'm willing to bet that too. But all I can say is that no president has been more supportive of law enforcement. No president, both in words and actions. So, and his supporters are similar. So, if there was people calling themselves Trump supporters that weren't actually there and they committed any vandalism or violence, then the movement ought to formally just say, hey, we reject you. I mean, but there was definitely Antifa people. And let's talk about the damage. Okay, I've gone through all the major network stories, CNN, USA Today, ABC News, and it's pitiful, but the damage. They tried to talk about the damage, and they have five or six pictures of some windows. A few windows were broken out, and a few doors were damaged. The office that you see prominently displayed with the papers displayed all around, you will notice at the same time, it has all the fixtures up there. The lamps are standing upright. No vandalism. So
you mean something. The Capitol wasn't burnt down?
No, it wasn't burnt down.
There wasn't graffiti on the walls?
No graffiti. There was many, many valuable pictures in that Capitol. None were damaged. So what the damage consisted of was a few windows, primarily where people entered, a few doors, some desks and benches were tumbled around. And then there was dust on the floor from the tear gas that the Capitol Police used on the people that broke into the
So after
the
8 months of Antifa and Black Lives Matter rallies all over the country, 35 cities, over 10,000 businesses either looted or burnt to the ground, and insurance companies claiming something like $10 billion in damages, and the media praises those, but calls this a couple broken windows, a insurrection, I think is the word they use.
Oh, yeah, sedition.
You've got to be kidding me.
No. And let's give you another example. In May of 2020, the Denver Capitol was assaulted by a group of just a few hundred BLM supporters, and they broke into the building. They destroyed 112 doors and windows. They broke down flagpoles. They destroyed 8 security cameras. And they did graffiti everywhere. $1.1 million worth of damage. That was hardly blinked at by the media. So this is complete and utter hypocrisy. The more they talk about it, the more hypocritical they are. And the fact that we have these weak-kneed, cowardly Republicans joining into the narrative is just pitiful. If they looked, I have to say it, but they looked like little rats scurrying for cover when the people broke in. It was pitiful. It was a pitiful response by our Republican legislators.
No congressman was physically in danger of their lives.
No.
No one was even close to being endangered.
Yeah. Now, I did see a video of Lindsey Graham being harassed, I think, at the airport by Trump supporters. He was never in physical danger, but he was verbally assaulted and held account for his duplicity and his, you know, double-mindedness on how he's been.
Yeah, he talks good. He talks a tough line sometimes, but nothing ever – I'm going to call hearings on this, and I'm going to do that, and nothing ever happens.
So let's just say this, that the damage was minor. It was in tens of thousands of dollars at the most, not hundreds of thousands of dollars. The police, that one police officer, and my heart breaks over that because that's young guy, 42 years old. That should not have happened. My heart breaks also for
and one of our own, an unarmed Air Force veteran.
Yes.
Shot and killed.
Yes, and that
But
shooting,
are there any riots in the country about that? No.
Completely an unjustified shooting. I'm sorry. There's no way you could justify that. So, and nobody brought guns into the Capitol there so that, you know, they may have had a flagpole or something like that, but there was no guns brought to the Capitol. They talked about armed people, and then they talk in the same sentence about somebody that was, you know, later in the day, a few blocks away, that was found with a gun. So this is completely and utterly
misrepresented. Yeah, there was no arms inside the Capitol.
So with that said, I'm going to say this. I don't think that the breaking into the Capitol was productive for us.
I agree.
It was not. And even if it had been done completely with nobody being injured, it still wouldn't have been productive. I can understand, though, because, listen, we are talking about an election being stolen. We're talking about our Constitution being trampled upon. And if there's any time to take action or be angry, this is the time to do it. But we have to be shrewd. We have to be intentional. And one of the things that I've been thinking about this, if the kind of action we take, if it's going to be civil disobedience, it needs to be falling more along the lines of Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. than the Black Panthers or BLM or Antifa.
I can understand the anger I'm not saying I justify it, but I can understand what happened here. Our founding fathers created a system where there was a number of grievances that could be aired. There's a system where you can air your grievances. They were shut down. Legislative grievances were shut down by Republicans and Democrats who refused to hold hearings, refused to subpoena voting machines, refused to do anything. The legal avenues were shut down by courts would even look at the case. So, and the social media shut our free speech rights down. When you have your grievances shut down in every single possible angle, then what do people have left to do but to go demonstrate outside the Capitol?
Exactly, Steve. So there, the courts in particular were signaled by John Roberts, Chief Justice John Roberts, to say that it was okay to deny court hearings. We had no hearing of the facts by the courts. All we did is have arcane and wimpy, you know, rulings about standing or locks, the doctrine of locks, saying it was after the fact. We never had a court seriously address the mountains of evidence on election fraud.
The left keeps on saying the evidence was rejected. No, it wasn't. There wasn't even a hearing. The cases were rejected. I'm talking 50 cases now were rejected without even a hearing. They weren't even accepted.
And why were they rejected? Well, they were rejected because the Supreme Court sent very clear signals that it was okay. The Pennsylvania case that was brought before the Supreme Court was a clear cut, absolutely black and white, no doubt about it, violation of election law and the Constitution. Yet Chief Justice John Roberts joined the liberals when, you know, when there was only eight people to not hear the court. And then Lindsey Graham dragged on the hearings for Amy Coney Barrett for a couple weeks. He did not need to do that, such that when she came on the court, they had the case before a day after she came on. So anyway, we have a lot to talk about. And in fact, I think when we come back, I want to talk with you, Steve, what, you know, your view of what happened in Georgia.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
This is Bob Siegel. I was sharing the gospel one day when the person I was talking to had a very good question. He was referring to the idea that the Bible says we inherited Adam and Eve's sin nature when they fell into sin. And he said, so I was born with a sin nature? That isn't my fault. Why should I have to pay for what some idiot did back in the Garden of Eden? I said, well, if it hadn't been him, it would have been you. Because the Bible not only says we're sinners by nature, but sinners by choice. Oh, yes, you have a nature that's prone to sin, but aren't you aware that there were many times you did not have to sin and you chose to do that? In the 5th chapter of Romans, we're told by the Apostle Paul that God gave us the law to show us that there are times we choose to sin. Evidently, there was something about the free will of man that needed some training. And the first human beings did not obey God, did not appreciate his boundaries and standards. We're sinners by nature and by choice. If it hadn't been Adam, it would have been me, folks, or you. Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious.
Welcome back. And once again, this is Mike Friedenberg. I'm standing in for Bob Siegel on The Bob Siegel Show. And I have with me former State Assemblyman Steve Baldwin. And we were talking about weak and feckless Republicans and the rally. But now, Steve, I want to turn and talk about what happened in Georgia. And you know, some of the establishment Republicans, certainly the never-Trumper types, are trying to blame Donald Trump for what happened in Georgia. And of course, the media, of course, it's all Donald Trump's fault there. But I have a different perspective on what happened in Georgia. But you know what? Let me hear about what you think happened in Georgia. Why did we lose both of those Senate races? The top two reasons, let's say.
We actually won both those races 2 months ago, and now we lost them because our Republican leadership in that state, the governor and the secretary of state, had all kinds of avenues open to them to investigate vote fraud, and they did not. There were minors voting. There were people who moved out of state voting. There were illegal aliens voting. There were dead people voting. There were signatures that did not match on thousands and thousands of absentee ballots. And at no point was there ever any effort by the Secretary of State to go through and try to weed out all this fraud.
Well, wait a minute, Steve. Now, wait a minute. Didn't you know that they went through two or three different audits? You do know they did those audits, Steve.
Yes, they ended up counting the same exact ballots over and over again. There was no filters used to weed out the illegal ballots.
Well, the fact is that not during the final audit they did, and I think it was DeKalb County, I believe, once again, no Republican observers were allowed to see the signature validation process, signature verification. Nobody was allowed. And in fact, in the contested states, you know, talking Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Nevada, Arizona, and of course, Georgia, the key thing is there in all of those states, Republicans were not allowed to validate and verify any of the signatures. They were kept away, and they were locked out of that process there. So that alone should have overturned the election. But back to Georgia there. So yes, on election in November 3rd, both Perdue and Loeffler, Perdue and Loeffler, looked like they should be able to win the runoff. Perdue was ahead with a Libertarian in the race who got 115,000 votes. He was ahead by over 100,000 votes over Ossoff. And when you add up the votes from the three or four Democrats that were opposing Collins and Loeffler, you know, you put that together, the Republicans were ahead by about 100,000 votes. Now, if you include the Libertarians with the Ossoff-Perdue thing, you could say maybe 150,000, 200,000 votes. And so that was the situation there. And what I believed happened is they looked and they said, okay, and by the way, here's something that's interesting. Perdue actually got about a couple thousand votes more than Donald Trump in Georgia, just to show you how bogus that election counting was, because there's no way that a candidate like Perdue got more votes than Donald Trump. Yeah. The reason he got more votes than Donald Trump is that Donald Trump's votes were suppressed.
Yes.
They were destroyed. And then beyond that, you had the target was Donald Trump in that November 3rd election. Now comes the runoff, and there have been further allegations. John Eastman made a very convincing case on that, showing that the same type of fraud that occurred on November 3rd occurred.
Well, they see that we didn't do anything about the first round of fraud, so why not do more of it?
There was no investigation of the fraud other than official investigation by official people really looking for it. The evidence was still there. So there's a very good chance I believe that at least Perdue won. Loeffler was really not a very good candidate, I have to tell you. She just was not.
He's weak.
But what killed them besides the fraud is they never, ever even had the guts to really challenge the elections that took place on November 3rd. The fraud, so basically what they did is by their silence or their equivocation or their you know, saying one thing to one group and another thing to another group, they alienated the Trump voters. Vast majority of the Trump voters still came out to support him, but they could have turned that anger over the stolen election in Georgia and brought it behind them. Instead, they just quashed it. They showed themselves to be spineless and weak.
It was a hard sell, Mike.
It was no enthusiasm.
They wanted Republicans to turn out in a fraudulent process without doing anything to correct the fraud to begin with.
Right.
And that's a hard sell.
So what you had is a situation there is, yes, people were voting against Warnock, they were voting against Ossoff, but they really weren't. There was no real enthusiasm to vote for Perdue.
You know what the main pitch was on our side?
And Loeffler.
We want you to vote. We want the Republicans to to vote in such large numbers, we outdo the vote fraud. Well, that's a great selling point. So everyone is acknowledging massive vote fraud, but if we just turn out just enough voters, we can beat the percentage of votes that are fraudulent, maybe. Well, how about the Republicans in charge correcting the vote fraud to begin with from 2 months ago? And they never did. This was solely a Republican establishment, never Trumper guy, the Governor Kemp, who didn't seem to want to lift a finger to correct anything that went wrong with that whole voting system
down
there.
And there was Rassenberger, too, the, Secretary of State.
Secretary of State, correct.
And so that was a disaster. Here we had videotape evidence. Now, all the other evidence, by the way, I think that if you were taken to a court of law, would have amounted to a very conclusive proof of fraud without that videotape. Probably. But when you add in the videotape of people shooing everybody out of the counting house, pulling out boxes, cases full of ballots that had been hidden under a table that had a cover over it, so hidden there.
Yeah.
And then you see them counting it. And then at the same time—
After they dismissed the poll watchers to go home.
Right. Then after you see them counting, you see the vote totals go up like 90%
Biden
votes. Yeah. And so that alone changed the election results. We never had a genuine court hearing on that. So now we can go back and let's talk about the roles of the state legislators in this whole process. Like yourself, I was very disappointed in the initial response of the state legislators. But I'm gonna defend them just a little bit. Not a whole lot, but a little bit here. You know, we had the election on November 3rd, and when I started hearing about the fraud, okay, and the scale of the fraud, my initial reaction was, oh, come on, that's a bit extreme. I mean, I believe there was going to be fraud, but the scale of it that was being talked about was a little bit off-putting. I quickly did my investigation and found out, okay, yeah, there was that. But the average person out there, when they start hearing about many hundreds of thousands of votes, perhaps a million votes, 2 million votes, fraud, they're reverse to wanting to believe it. It's a natural reaction because it's just so big. So one of the things the Democrats did is the fraud they committed was so big that it made it hard to believe, that it created a natural skepticism in people. And I think then you have the media environment. Immediately, there was no investigation. They didn't care about the affidavits that people signed. Immediately, the words baseless, debunked, crazy, unsubstantiated, right? That was the words immediately the day afterwards when we started talking about the fraud. And in that environment, a lot of the state legislators, not all, but a lot of them said that the claims were too big and they didn't really want to hear it. Plus, for some of these state legislators, they were coming to the end of their session. They had a very limited amount of time to even absorb the information, and then they're out of session. Once you're out of session, you just don't get called back. You have to do a special session. It usually requires the governor to call you back in.
Yeah.
So there was a limited amount of time, and you know, and a lot of them, and the other thing too, is the pressure from the Trump supporters had not yet really kicked in big time to start pressuring them to do their job. So the initial wave was unimpressive of the response from the state legislators. However, the Trump people and the Trump team kept on working. The Trump people stepped calling in, and then slowly started to gain traction. And so by the time we finally got to January 6th, a lot of the state legislators had started to come around and said, oh, my heavens, we were bamboozled. We were lied to. We didn't do our job. And they started to say we want to do our job. So Pence got a letter from over 120 legislators from four states saying, hey, give us the extra time. We're now seeing evidence of substantial fraud. And we're now back in session. So we can actually, rather than—
They wanted time for a 10-day period for forensic analysis of the actual voting machines. They could use their subpoena power that the legislature has to actually subpoena voting machines and have experts come look at them. And Pence was asked to delay the process. He has the power as VP to delay the electoral process. So the media completely reported why Trump was mad at Pence.
They misreported, but also I think Mike Pence also mischaracterized what President Trump had asked. He put out a statement that mischaracterized what President Trump had asked him to do.
Yeah.
His statement intimated that Trump had asked him to just flat out, in the session, change the votes and give the election to him.
Yeah.
That is not what President Trump asked Mike Pence to do. What he said is, you have these state legislators. These are the people, the primary people in our Constitution who are to decide these sorts of things. And let's give them 5 to 10 days to really investigate before we certify and a fraudulent election. Yeah. And he didn't do that. So let's ask why he didn't do that. Steve, why do you think that? I mean, I've been pleased with Mike Pence as vice president over these last 4 years. I think he's done it. He's been solid. He's been a nice counterbalance to Donald Trump. His personality, everything. It's a nice counterbalance to President Trump. He's very calm, even, measured.
Yeah.
And I think he's been loyal. So what happened to Mike Pence in the end, Steve?
I don't know. I'm very disappointed in him, because asking for a 10-day delay is, I think, very fair, given the amount of vote fraud that had already been dug up so far. And when you have that many state legislators ask you for a delay, since the actual swearing in is not till January 20th?
The January 20th.
They had plenty of time to do it. And he must have received some pressure from the establishment wing of the party to the effect that they're going to wreck his career. And if he ever wants to run for president, you better reject that request. So I suspect he wants to run for president. I suspect he thinks he did what he did in order to increase his chances of winning the nomination. But I have news for him. I think the base is so angry with him that I don't think he could win a Republican primary at this point.
Well, I agree with that, largely agree with that. I think there's some other elements there. But I wasn't ever quite sure that Mike Pence was the guy that could really seize the mantle of Donald Trump. He's just not the guy to do it. Number one, I wasn't sure he could ever do that. But but being his vice president, he certainly would have been one of the top contenders. And he has got to be smart enough to know that doing this would kill a lot of his chances politically. I believe he's smart enough to know that. So I think the other element is what we've been seeing. What have we been seeing over the last few months? We've been seeing people in positions of power, the congressmen and senators talking about that once Trump's out of office and Trump administration office, that they're coming for them. They're coming through them with the power, the full power of the state. The power of the corrupt DOJ, the power of the corrupt FBI. Yeah. Then on top of that, you would be very naive and sort of out of it not to have some fear about that.
Sure.
Given what we've seen from those agencies so far. Then you add in the assaults, the Wayne County canvassers, the two ones that initially voted not to certify the canvass.
Yeah.
Then they were pressured to certify it. Well, the woman canvasser came on and the people were attacking her. They sent her pictures of women and girls being raped and assaulted. She has a daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the kind of stuff we were talking about. So legitimate fears of physical assault, along with the state coming after you. And I think that there's a lot of fear. And that's why we've seen some of the Trump admin people going on and trying to protect themselves by going to places like CNN and backstabbing Donald Trump. It's fear. Now,
I think the establishment wing likes Pence because they think he was a moderating influence on Trump. So I think Pence is a guy who thinks he can get both the Trump wing and the establishment wing of the party behind any kind of a candidacy for president. But after that, after what's happened with the Electoral College refusing a very simple request to delay for 10 days, not have set back the Constitution or set back anything, I think the Trump, the MAGA movement, which is millions, hundreds of millions strong in this country, is going to be very critical of Pence for that action alone. And they're going to get behind someone else, if not Donald Trump himself, maybe his son, or maybe Mike Flynn, as another name's been tossed around.
Yeah, and I think that the two of the people that really come to mind right now that have been really upper tier, and I don't think Mike Flynn is the guy to do it, to be honest. And I'm not even sure about his son. If his son runs for the U.S. Senate, and his son is not Donald Trump. They're great, great family. They're not Donald Trump, though. Is that Josh Hawley has been one person talked about. But the other person,
who?
Josh Hawley.
Oh, yeah.
And Ron DeSantis.
Yeah, they're both solid men.
Both very solid. Those could be there. So anyway, we could talk a little bit about that there. But also, before we get done with the show today, I want to talk about some things that every single person that's listening right now, every supporter of Trump, every supporter of the Constitution can do right now, and we're going to be talking about that in the next segment.
Okay.
Thank you. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others, sadly, do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. There are ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us.
Skyline Church.
This is Bob Siegel. I protest, the student shouted as he kicked our Christian book table. What seems to be the problem, I asked. I protest your teaching. I think it's unfair that I'm not going to heaven simply because I'm not a Christian. I looked at him and I said, friend, you don't want to go to heaven. What do you mean I don't want to go to heaven? Well, I think you have a misconception of what heaven will be like. Heaven is not some big cloud where angels sit around and strum harps. Heaven is not some island where native women fan you with palm branches and stick grapes in your mouth. Heaven is a place where you will serve and obey God for the rest of eternity. You don't even want to serve and obey him now. What makes you think you're going to want to do it for the rest of eternity? Hell is a place where you'll be all by yourself and nobody will tell you what to do. I'll never forget his reaction. After a second of pondering, he said, that sounds fair. Folks, it is fair. The gospel is very fair. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Mike Friedenberg filling in for Bob today. I'm very honored to do so, and very honored to have my guest with me, Steve Baldwin, former executive for Council on National Policy, former state assemblyman right here in San Diego for 6 years. And before we left, we said we're going to talk about some practical things you can do, but I just want to quickly finish up on the whole situation for 2024. Right now, I have to say, the person I've been most impressed with of all the people, potential candidates, the one that has the most solid resume and that showed himself to be the shrewdest, the smartest, and have the spirit of the populist movement is Ron DeSantis.
I would agree with that.
And I mean, he would be, right now, he's the front runner for me. Josh Hawley coming in, I appreciate him. He's a little bit newer. I'm not, he has not been tried and tested like Ron DeSantis has been. So I think that that's, a very good solution. I never really thought that President Donald J. Trump in 2024 made a whole lot of sense. I mean, that's 4 years from now. He's 75 years old. That would put him at 79. It's, it's a possibility. And if things turn out and he's running and everything is good. But I'm really hoping that he's going to be continuing to be a leader of the movement, and that he will do some of the things like helping us to set up some information and communication resiliency that we have. Obviously, we're very short on, and we'll sort of be talking about that a little bit here as we move on to practical things we can do right now as just average people, and we're not talking about storming the Capitol or breaking into buildings. But here's some things that we can do, and I'm going to go through this, and then Steve, if you can think of some things we can do, please jump in here. But number one, I was talking to my sister, and I almost forgot to put this in. I'm ashamed to say I did. But we need to pray.
Absolutely.
And we need to pray for sharp, shrewd, ethical, and honest leaders to step up. And we have some right now, but we probably can use some more. We need this. We need some people to step up because we're going to be going through some tough times here, and it's not going to be easy. But we listen, if we don't fight now, we're going to look back and what have we handed off to our kids and our grandkids?
Yeah.
And we need to do this right now. And so there's things we can do right now. And there's maybe bigger things we could do down the road. But here's some things we could do tomorrow. So let's talk about what we could do tomorrow. Well, or even tonight, but let's say tomorrow. Number one, call the White House and leave a comment of encouragement for President Trump. I'm not going to tell you what to say, but leave a comment of encouragement and support for him, and how much you appreciate him, and that you're with him, that you're fighting for him, and that you've got his back. You can also just go to his site, his non-official site, which is donaldjtrump.com, and you know, and go to the contact page, and you can fill in your contact information and send him a message there. You could also go to the whitehouse.gov contact page and do the same thing. The only one thing I'm a little bit concerned about that whitehouse.gov contact page is, I believe that page is going to roll on over to Biden in just a few short days. So
yeah.
I'm not sure if you want to put in your cell phone number and all your contact information and then hand it over to Joe Biden.
Yeah.
That is my only concern. So the DonaldJTrump.com contact page, which is his official campaign site. Yes, by the way, that site's a little bit obnoxious because of all the fundraising it asks you for, but you can just put in a comment there and send it to him. I think that that would be a very good thing to do. And he needs that. And then the White House, there is a comment line, and that's 202-456-1111. Either way. Let's move off and transition away from Facebook and Twitter at the bare minimum.
Absolutely.
And I've spent a lot of time building up my Facebook following. I'm not huge, but I have, you know, like 3,500 people, and that took me a lot of time to build that number of people up. And yeah. I spent even a bit of money doing it. But right now, it's becoming so onerous, the amount of the shadow banning I've seen. I can't talk about the
what
the
real social science. Media platform are you moving to, Mike?
I'm for Facebook. I believe the best alternative out there is MeWe for
MeWe?
Facebook. Yes,
okay.
It's a very similar format to Facebook. It has, you can write, you know, short messages or long messages. It really works pretty much the same way as Facebook. It may not be quite as many features as Facebook because it's, you know, it doesn't have 2.3 billion, yeah. you know, members.
But it'll grow.
But it will grow. So that was what I recommended for Facebook. Now, I've never been a big Twitter person, and that's an area I probably should be have been better at in terms of communication. There's people that we know that are very good in Twitter. I'm not one of them, but Twitter clearly is got to be something that we get off of as soon as possible. So right now it looks like there's two really good alternatives, and I would say, you know, you could sign up for both. I signed up for Parler, and by the way, Parler is going to be shut down at midnight tonight. Amazon. Amazon would.
Well, they're fighting in court, and they could be back up soon.
And if they can't get back up, that this has to be a massive breach of contract.
This is
a
full-on police state move by the left to try to shut down all alternative voices that may challenge the radical Biden agenda that is soon to be shoved down our throats.
Now, even if Amazon does remove them, Parler will be back up, and I predict in less than a week. So Parler is a very good alternative, and interesting, you know, Donald Trump has a presence there, a few million people. Interestingly, Sean Hannity has a massive presence there. He could be a really strong force. He's 79 million followers on Parler.
Really?
Yes. I was shocked to see that.
I did not know that.
Yes. So he, you know, the words could be gotten out. But the other one that people are talking about, they've gained something like 35 million people in the last few days, is Gab. And the President Trump had always had a presence on Gab, did not use it much. So Gab is another source. So those
G-A-A-B, is it?
I think so. I
don't know anything about that one.
I don't know anything about that, but Donald Trump has been on, and apparently they've been doing well. So Gab and Parler. So those are the places you go to.
And a lot of people are ditching Google for DuckDuckGo browser.
Yes, and I'm using DuckDuckGo, and you can, for privacy, you can also use the Tor browser in combination with DuckDuckGo.
I mean, people need to understand that Google was contracted out by Communist China to shut down all dissent on the internet in China. And they're going to use that same technology, Google is, and it already is, to shut down us here in the United States. They're a bunch of liberal Nazis running Google.
Yes. DuckDuckGo is a good alternative. I will tell you that for the everyday average things that's not political, it's doesn't have the same kind of database that Google does. It's not as sophisticated. There's some things you still may use Google for. But if you actually want to find something on election fraud, I mean, I've worked out a very complicated algorithm to make Google work for me, but the average person is not going to do that.
Yeah, because they manipulate Google.
Yeah,
when you want to search for something conservative, it's like the 30th thing you might find. They make sure that the first 20 sites that pop up are on the left.
That would be good. If it's only 30, that you're doing well on some topics, Steve. I mean, so DuckDuckGo is good. And if you go to that, you'll actually be able to find a balance of articles, you know, calling the election bogus, but articles also talking about the election fraud. You'll find a more balanced thing from DuckDuckGo.
I got a couple solutions. We have time?
Yeah, let me get, maybe we can finish with the ones. Okay. Then support your local businesses. And that what I mean is right here in San Diego area, and I know for La Mesa, and I'm not going to name any of the places because I don't want them to be targeted, but there are restaurants that are open.
Yeah.
They desperately need your business. So find these restaurants.
Okay, let me add to this. Mike, the Fortune 500 types are supporting the left, and they've been supporting the looting, the groups like Black Lives Matter, and supporting attacks on Trump. They've been basically portraying the USA. Whenever possible, I think people need to find local store owners, local mom and pop places to buy their clothes, their food, consumer products, whatever possible. Try to find a local store, because the big giant organizations, the big chains,
Amazon
and even Target and Coca-Cola and a lot of these big companies are funding the left to the tune of billions of dollars collectively, and they're destroying America. And I'm going to set up a whole website here soon. It's going to have a whole section on who to boycott alone. But in general, the smaller, the better. The mom and pop stores, the smaller you can go down to community groups that sell things, the better off you're going to be. Because if half the America is supporters of Trump, and if we start being smart about how we spend our consumer dollars, we can starve the opposition.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. So do go out of your way to find a restaurant, a pub, or even a bar, to support there. But your barber, your hairstylist, those people, you know, contact them. Hey, I want to do an appointment, or, you know, can we get together? Or are you going to be open? I need a haircut right now.
Same here.
And then you have your gyms, your dance studios, martial arts, things like that. Reach out to the people, the small business people, the people, and let them know you want to patronize them. They need to make a living, and this is a very reasonable, very measured act of civil disobedience to do this. And if you should be willing to do this, please do it tomorrow. Okay, now contact your local city council members and supervisors, and in particular the sheriff here in town. Local jurisdictions, towns and cities, and of course counties, have the ability to throw some shade over these businesses in protecting them from Gavin Newsom's harsh restrictions. If the city council stands up to them, they could really help their businesses. If the supervisors, which unfortunately we lost, are probably not going to be as good as they used to be, but we fortunately got Joel Anderson on there. He's very shrewd, and he'll probably be able to help. But so you need to contact your city council members, number one, whether they're a town or city council, and let them know that you want the businesses to be supported. You want them to be kept open, that you want to support the businesses, and that you do not appreciate the severe abridgment of your civil and constitutional rights, and that you know the science and the data, and that this is not helping.
And related to that, Mike, we need to encourage legal groups out there who are not only fighting against unconstitutional COVID restrictions, but legal groups that will target unconstitutional Biden programs. He's going to try to do all kinds of things by executive order. And it's going to take a slew of public interest groups like Judicial Watch, for example.
Absolutely.
I don't know if they have enough attorneys to handle all the incoming left-wing initiatives that need to be challenged. For example, the Paris Global Warming Accord. That needs to be approved by the Senate. But Biden's going to try to go rejoin it without Senate approval. Someone needs to sue them. We need to make sure we support these groups like Judicial Watch. Judicial Watch had 200 lawsuits last year alone against the left. And they're one of the best groups in America that really protect our rights and make sure that these politicians don't attack our constitutional rights and privileges.
Steve, absolutely. Tom Fitton and Judicial Watch have been absolutely done yeoman's work on this. I mean,
Seclo's got a group that works on Christian religious freedom issues. Same thing.
Yeah, and those groups. Without those kind of groups, we wouldn't know one-fifth of what we know about the corruption. They're the ones who did it. We didn't get any support from the DOJ. We didn't get any support from any of Donald Trump's
Now, also, Mike, we need to deal with voting fraud. Until we correct voting fraud, it's hard to get our people out to vote. Republican parties all over the country have standing to sue their states if they feel that the voting fraud was, if they can prove it, and they can't, I believe, at least in the swing states. So we need to encourage the Republican Party everywhere to go into court to or to continue investigations if they need to right now. And I don't care if they have to hire cyber experts or forensic analysis people or whatever, get a hold of the voting file and find out how many people on that list are dead or moved out of state. They need to start going into court and suing in every state where we believe fraud took place and go after them and win. The only way we're going to win this battle is because we cannot rely on our politicians is, I believe, through the courts. And I think in this case, the legal arm of the Republican Party in the various states where this fraud took place.
Yeah, and we need to hold elected officials and your local, Republican Party members. You need to let them know that we are going to hold them accountable. We want them to not drop this, not succumb to the pressure from the media and the left. We want the election fraud to be pursued. So contact your local Republican legislators. Let them know it's not acceptable to ignore this fraud, that we want to investigate it. And even though California was never in play, there was lots of fraud in California. Sure. So we need to have investigations in California. Very good point. And then, go ahead and send a donation to Judicial Watch. Go ahead and send a donation. What is it? The American, the J. Sekulow's group.
People need to know that 200,000 legal aliens, maybe 300,000, are now voting in California. We know that based on the Ivy League study. We know that about 10% of all legal aliens are now voting. And that means that's enough illegal aliens to actually impact congressional races throughout California. But no one has ever investigated that here in California.
So that's stuff you could start to do tomorrow. Everything we've mentioned here, you can get on the phone. You can actually find Judicial Watch. You can find those organizations. For example, the Thomas More Society, the Emma Stott Project did awesome work in this last cycle. And they need to be supported. So all these organizations, you can actually be supporting that. This is stuff you can do. You don't have to be there, be the front person, it's not a time for it now, but there's a lot of things that the average person could do. And then a final thing I'm going to talk about here before, and there's other things to talk about, is get involved with the Gavin Newsom recall. Go to recallgavin2020.com. You can volunteer. You can download a petition. This is something that will really...
Mike, how do you answer when people say, well, yeah, but he just gets replaced by another liberal. So how do you respond to that?
Well, listen, I actually, years ago, interviewed Kevin Faulkner, who was running for the student body president for San Diego State. I was on the editorial staff of the Daily Aztec. Kevin Faulkner is thinking of running. Now, he's not a grassroots conservative, but I'm going to tell you, my views have changed over the years. Years ago, I fought against Pete Wilson. I would love a Pete Wilson right now. I have to be honest.
I will say a liberal Republican is vastly better than a hardcore leftist Democrat.
Right.
And because I don't think a conservative can win statewide in California anymore.
I'm thinking that a Kevin Faulkner may have a shot. So somebody like that, he's politically shrewd.
There's a lot of anger out there about the COVID restrictions, so he can take advantage of that.
Exactly there. So basically, to reiterate, email and contact President Trump with messages of support and letting him know that you're going to have your back, that you're continuing the fight. Get off of Facebook and Twitter. Support your local businesses. Contact your local elected officials. Support legal organizations that are doing the fight. And, with that said, once again, thanks to Bob Siegel for letting me sit in and host the show. And Bob Siegel will be back next week. Same time, same bat channel.
And keep our country in prayer.
Thank you.
Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.